We know the Astari, Gandalf and the others, the five wizards of Middle-earth, but what exactly was their mission, and how powerful were they? Let's take a look. Hi everyone, this is Robert. Welcome to In Deep Geek. On this channel, we dive deep into Tolkien's Legendarium, as well as other great fantasy worlds like A Song of Ice and Fire and The Witcher. Welcome. I've covered each of the Astari separately in other videos, but I thought I'd bring it all together here to look at them as a whole, what their mission was, what their order was like, and how powerful they were. Let's start with the basics. The word Istari is the Quenya, Elvish word, that is translated into our tongue as wizard, though it holds a broader meaning than just magic user. It means wise or learned one, someone with a detailed knowledge of history and lore and the world. The word may well have been in use earlier, but it came to be associated in particular with the five apparently old men who appeared in Middle-earth around the year 1000 of the Third Age, who formed some kind of order. It's probably worth pointing out at this stage that the exact nature of that order and who the Astari were was unknown to almost everyone in Middle-earth. Seemingly only Elrond, Galadriel and Círdan actually knew. In fact, even the idea that these five were connected was probably beyond most people, because they certainly didn't act like they were. Amongst mortal peoples who met them, it was assumed that they were just long-lived humans who had studied long and hard for their wisdom and abilities. Remember, at that time some men were long-lived indeed. Elendil, to take one example, was 322 years old when he died fighting Sauron. But eventually, it became apparent even to humans that these Astari were living too long and were too unchanging to be any kind of actual human. So most assumed they were instead elves of some kind, and they even named them as such. Gandalf, the name that Istari went by among mankind, literally means elf with the staff or wand. It's basically just a description of who they thought he was. Anyway, the important point here is that whereas this video will set out who the Astari are, what powers they have and their limitations, that was not known to the vast majority of people in Middle-earth. Most did not know that they were immortal and powerful Maiar, merely in the guise of old men. This secrecy is in complete contrast to the first time those five were sent on a mission to Middle-earth, although there were six of them then. This was hinted at in the published materials we already had from Tolkien, but it was only with the publication of The Nature of Middle-earth that we got the details. When the elves first awoke in Middle-earth, back in the mists of time, the Valar decided to invite them to stay with them in the Undying Lands, rather than stay where they were. This made sense from a number of perspectives, but one of them was that the Valar were wanting to wage war once more on Morgoth, and the last time they'd done that, it had been pretty devastating for the planet. While the Valar were off preparing for that, they left the Five Guardians, as they were known, plus Melian the Maiar to guard the elves. The thinking here by the Valar appears to be pretty straightforward. We'll send some of our most powerful Maiar, which will reassure the elves by their presence. However, it seems that having such obviously powerful beings just hanging around keeping an eye on the elves made some of the elves start to question the motives of the Valar. Some thought, we read, "The Valar clearly do exist, but they have abandoned Middle-earth, rightly as the appointed realm of the Quendi. Now they are becoming jealous and wish to control the Quendi as vassals and so repossess themselves of Middle-earth." The Quendi is, of course, what the elves call themselves. The result was that some of the elves refused the Valar's strong suggestion that they go with them to the Undying Lands, and still more only went some of the way before stopping. The Valar learned the important lesson that sometimes a show of strength and telling people what to do just makes them dig their heels in a bit more. Much better to help, support and encourage. So the next time they sent those Maiar to Middle-earth to help out, they went for a different approach. No open displays of power this time. Instead, these Maiar would be clad in bodies as of men, real and not feigned, but subject to the fears and pains and weariness of earth, able to hunger and thirst and be slain, though because of their noble spirits they did not die, and aged only by the cares and labour of many long years. And this the Valar did, desiring to amend the errors of old, especially that they had attempted to guard and seclude the Eldar by their own might and glory fully revealed, whereas now their emissaries were forbidden to reveal themselves in forms of majesty, or to seek to rule the wills of men or elves by open displays of power, but coming in shapes weak and humble, were bidden to advise and persuade men and elves to good, and to seek to unite in love and understanding all those whom Sauron, should he come again, would endeavour to dominate and corrupt. So that's why the Astari appeared as old men. We'll get back to the details of what that means in a moment, but first, who were they, actually? And how bought into this mission were they? Saruman, whose real name was Curumo, was the chief and wisest of the Order. As a Maiar, he was attached to Aule the Smith, and when the Valar decided to send some Maiar to Middle-earth, he was one of only two who stepped forward, so he was clearly keen to go and keen to take the lead. We know what happened to him in Middle-earth, but he was clearly already proud and rather haughty as a Maiar, and as one of Aule's Maiar, his fascination with the craft of ringmaking was perhaps also easy to predict. Alatar, one of the two blue wizards, was the other Maiar to step forward for the mission. He took his friend Palando with him. They had both been attached to the Valar Orome, the huntsman, and to be honest, we don't know huge amounts about them, because Tolkien didn't either. He wrote in 1958 that, "I really do not know anything clearly about the other two, since they do not concern the history of the Northwest. I think they went as emissaries to distant regions, east and south, far out of Numenorean range, missionaries to enemy-occupied lands, as it were. What success they had, I do not know, but I fear that they failed, as Saruman did, though doubtless in different ways, and I suspect they were founders or beginners of secret cults and magic traditions that outlasted the fall of Sauron." The other two Astari seem less keen to have gone. Gandalf, whose real name was Olorin, was commanded to go by Manwë himself, even though he was afraid of Sauron, and Radagast, real name Eowendil, only went because Yavanna begged Saruman to take him along with him. This is an interesting wrinkle in the dynamics of the Astari, because Yavanna is the Valar associated with nature, and Radagast clearly also values nature highly. But why was Yavanna so insistent that her representative go to Middle-earth? Might it have been to counter what she feared Saruman might do to destroy nature? She has a history of this sort of thing. Her husband Aule crafted the dwarves, and she thought they might chop down a few too many trees, so she lobbied for the Ents to also be created to protect the trees. And Radagast did undoubtedly do his part in protecting nature, and his relationship with the eagles led directly to Gandalf being able to escape from Orthanc, so perhaps she had some foresight there. Anyway, although these five Maiar were sent as an order, when they got there, they very clearly weren't working together. The Blue Wizards as friends stuck together, but headed off east and, as far as we can tell, had no further contact with Gandalf or Radagast. Saruman had a particularly disdainful attitude towards Radagast and an antipathy towards Gandalf. Radagast largely kept to himself, and although Gandalf forged a strong set of allies, he made a point of not settling down anywhere or seeking much by way of aid. Noticeably, when the White Council of the Wise and the Good of Middle-earth was set up, only Gandalf and Saruman were members, and even then many years seemed to go by without any contact between those two. They were an order, but again, Tolkien doesn't really elaborate on what that means. Two things stand out here, though: their colours and their staffs. A wizard's staff is clearly important to them, perhaps as some kind of focus for their magic, but it is clearly not needed in order for a wizard to perform magic. Gandalf's staff broke when facing the Balrog on the bridge of Khazad-dûm, but she went on to defeat it in combat later anyway. Instead, it seems primarily here to be a symbol of a wizard's authority. When Gandalf, now Gandalf the White, casts Saruman from the Order, he says that, "Your staff is broken." And it breaks, after which he says that Saruman still has some power, particularly if he stays in Orthanc and in the power of his voice, but his authority is gone. In the same vein, the colour of the wizards seemed to be not so much a fashion choice as a reflection of who they are. Radagast's brown matches his love of nature, Gandalf's grey his humility and perhaps the dust of the road as he travels so much, Saruman's white is goodness or purity. He is the head of this order sent by the Valar, after all. When he abandons that fully, he adopts new colours. Saruman of many colours, he calls himself. And when Gandalf returns as the White, he declares himself to be Saruman as he should have been. Gandalf is taking on the authority and the position of Saruman. So in a way, the Astari's mission was compromised from the start. Rivalries and bad relationships between them, some sent specifically to counter the presence of others, little apparent effort to work together once they were there, and so on. And the Valar also made things harder, for the reasons we covered a moment ago, by making the Astari have to take on the bodies of old men, who, like normal mortals, would grow tired and hungry and world-weary. Contrary to what some people assume, this means the Astari did age physically. Tolkien tells us that they aged only by the cares and labours of many long years, and that they always appeared old, but grew older with their labours, slowly. We actually see this when Gandalf returns to see Frodo after being gone for many years hunting for Gollum. Frodo thinks that Gandalf looks older and more careworn. Understandable, given he knows the end of his mission and the final battle with Sauron is now fast approaching. And on a much longer time frame, we're told that when he arrived in Middle-earth, Saruman had black hair, but by the time of the Lord of the Rings it was nearly all white. They knew who and what they were and what their mission was, but memories of the Blessed Realm were blurred to them. And the Astari were, it should, I hope, be apparent that they were all very fallible. Three of the five fell in various ways. One disappeared when the final confrontation was at hand, and even Gandalf, who obviously stuck by his commission, was far from perfect. He forgot things and got things wrong and was sometimes a little bit grumpy, even with those he cared about. But despite all these encumbrances and negatives, there is no doubt that the five Astari were among the most powerful and influential figures of the Third Age. The story of the Lord of the Rings would have been very different without Gandalf or Saruman. Radagast played his part too, and even the Blue Wizards were said in one account to have had many successes in the East before their eventual fall. Which leads us to the conclusion that they must also have been some of the most powerful beings in the Fourth Age of Middle-earth, in the centuries that followed the Lord of the Rings. We often talk about how in the Fourth Age the powerful magical beings stepped back and the dominion of man began, which is true. Gandalf, Elrond, Galadriel and other powerful elves left for the Blessed Realm. Sauron, Saruman, Smaug, the Balrog, the Nazgul were all vanquished. Humans were in the ascendancy. But a handful of powerful beings did still remain. The Watcher in the Water survived, as did the Nameless Things deep, deep underground, and Shelob and some lesser dragons in the far north, and Tom Bombadil and Goldberry, of course, always the exception. But we also have three Maiar, alive and well and powerful, Radagast and the Blue Wizards. Radagast, I suspect, did not intervene much in the matters of men, but the Blue Wizards did. The influence of the Astari lived on. If you'd like to see more videos like this, diving deep into the history and lore of Tolkien's Legendarium, there's a link to my playlist on the left of your screen now. Or to support this channel, thank you. There's a link to my Patreon page on the right of your screen. That's all for this time. Thanks for watching. I'll see you again soon.